Hola, hello, hi, bienvenido, and welcome back, or welcome to Mentors Today. Today, I'm super excited to be joined by Christian Narayez, founder of Rayo Capital and co-founder of the Web3 Familia. Christian, let me tell you a little bit about him, everybody. He's a dynamic investor and community leader in the Web3 world. He's a disruptor of the status quo and a leader, therefore, by example of how we can build better and more inclusive entrepreneurial economies. Christian's firm, Rayo Capital, is a venture fund that's shaping the Web3 landscape. And as co-founder of Web3 Familia, he's also helping lead a new global community and support network for Latino founders, developers, and community leaders in the Web3 economy. Christian's personal journey is inspiring, and we're going to let him tell us that story. And his leadership inside of the Web3 economy extends beyond these ventures. Before we got on the show, we were talking about he was just up in Congress last week talking to a delegation of local New York politicians, which, considering how dysfunctional Congress is today, it's pretty important that people like him are bringing the new forward-looking vision for what we need in our entrepreneurial economy and, frankly, just in the country and the world at large. So bringing it to the attention of the politicians. So a huge advocate for inclusion, equality of opportunity and access for the Latino community and just in general. And all in all, I got to say, he's just a good dude. So I'm super excited to have him here today. Christian, welcome, buddy. Bienvenido to Mentors Today.
Rob, Ryan, thank you so much for the invitation. We have a lot of mutual connections from different parts of our lives, which are pretty awesome. So pretty cool to finally be here talking to you.
Right. And they are all really good people. So we know our boy Cuco is going to be super excited to listen to this episode. So we know we have at least one listener.
At a minimum.
Hey, I want to jump right into it because you are, by every measure, you are not the traditional conventional venture capitalist or investor, right? You weren't the conventional guy in traditional finance early in your career, and you definitely are not the traditional profile of what the world thinks of venture capitalists. So I want you to tell us your story, right? Like, I want you to just go all the way back as far as you want to go. Like, how did we wind up here having the conversation about the stuff that we're going to talk about today?
Yeah. Do you want the real story or the real story?
I want the real story, and I want you to go back as far or as not far as you want to. We're going to unpack it all today.
It's interesting to hear you say that I have the conventional traditional finance background, and I would say not really. Even breaking into investment banking, I did it in a very unconventional way. And then I guess to kick things off, I'll talk a little bit about sort of my background, where I'm from, and then build up from there to get to where we are today. So, you know, born and raised in Queens, New York, in Corona, Queens, New York, in Lafayette City, and attended community college. So, you know, I worked full time. I used to sell sneakers when I was in high school, and I focused a lot of my time in juggling both school and full time work, where I didn't get the good grades. I even got left back in high school. Okay. Due to the fact that I was working full-time always, and I just didn't really pay attention to sort of school and whatnot, right? And because of that, I started my college career at a community college, right? So again, very an unconventional way to where I am today. And then, you know, statistically speaking, the dropout rate from community college is really high. Made it through community college, went to a four-year college, which was Baruch College in the city here in Manhattan. And then I always tell people, I took the scenic route to college because it took me more or less 5 years to graduate with a four-year degree.
Yeah.
And then even through college, I worked full-time. But the cool thing was that I would only go to school 2 days a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays, from 8 in the morning until 11 at night. And that was because Tuesdays and Thursdays were the club days. And that's where I was able to engage with the local clubs on campus and be able to get leadership experience, get my resume up to speed with, and be able to just be competitive for the job market out there. And that's when I came across a nonprofit that is dear to my heart, which is ALFA, Association of Latino Professionals for America. And there is where I learned within that network is where a lot of my mentors came from. I mean, that was the first time I ever saw many Latinos and Latinas in a suit for the first time. You know, I'm a first gen Latino. My parents immigrated from Ecuador in the 80s here to New York, and I was the first one to graduate college. And then obviously with that said, ALFA served as that big brother, big sister community And that's where I started learning about the power of community. And yeah, so I broke into sort of Wall Street. I eventually made it my way up to investment banking. And I would say a lot of the roles as I progressed throughout my 10 years in traditional finance, Alpha was there along the way to, you know, teach me about salary negotiation, about networking, and figure out ways to break into roles that conventionally, wow, you know, a kid from a community college wouldn't be able to break into. And again, I took the scenic route to investment banking. I networked my way into it and eventually became an investment banker, covered both the US and the Latin America markets for about 8 of those 10 years. And then eventually in 2020, after a long 10 years, was pretty burnt out and then left. And sort of my goal was to travel the world for a whole year in 2020, but that's when the
pandemic. Whoops.
And then happy to go more into sort of the deeper.
The world had a different perspective on what you were supposed to do in 2020.
It was a blessing in disguise, and happy to go more into that for sure.
Yeah. No, we'll unpack that a little bit. Tell me more about, and tell us more about Alpha. So you met them, you met this organization when you're young, right? When you're just kind of getting started on the whole journey. And they help you navigate your way through community college, through college, into your professional life. But then they stuck with you. I mean, like, that was a resource for you
100%
throughout your career. So I would have, has that been the kind of an organization like you've been able to go back and like you've mentored people?
I'm still on the board. So I'm still on the Alpha.
Okay,
New York
on the board. That's awesome.
So Alpha New York, Alpha in general, so it stands for Association of Latino Professionals for America. It's the largest Latino professional network in the United States. It was born in 1972. We have about 100,000 members across the country, about 40 plus professional chapters, and over, I think, 200 college chapters across the nation.
Wow.
And they have programming for, you know, college students, for young professionals, middle managers, and C-suite level executives. So because of their sort of platform that they have from college to C-suite level executive, I've been able to participate. I've been on the New York board and had leadership roles within marketing, events, fundraising. And I still sit on the board today and I lead their venture capital education program. It's something that we rolled out back in 2021. And actually a month and a half ago during our national convention in San Antonio, Texas, we launched a national initiative to educate sort of our community about this new asset class that historically we haven't had access to, which is venture capital. And with Alpha, it's always been sort of that community that you are the owner of your destiny as long as you obviously are committed, you're disciplined, and you execute at a high level. They've been able to give me opportunities to move around, take on different leadership roles. And after about 10 years, I pitched to the leadership team that I wanted to start a new initiative, which is called, you know, Alpha New York Ventures, and it's the education arm of what Alpha is in within the New York chapter.
That's awesome. So selfishly, here in my community in Los Angeles, I assume there's a chapter?
Correct. Big one.
A big one, obviously. Yeah, that would make sense. That's cool. That's terrific. Talk to me a little bit about the finance career, right? Investment banking. Like, so was that one of those, hey, I'm going to college in Manhattan, I'm in New York City, like everybody goes to work in investment banking and finance things? Or was that something that early on in your academic life, like you started to set, you like, oh, I want to go there. Like I'm fascinated by money, or I'm interested in world of finance. What was the decision making for you?
Yeah, I was always competitive. I mean, I played sports. I played soccer when I was in junior high school and high school. And I don't know, just I always wanted to be the best salesperson selling sneakers. I always crushed it. So I've always been competitive. And I would say when I transferred into Baruch from community college, I had an idea that I wanted to go into finance, into business. Did I really know what I wanted to get into? Not really. But Baruch is a very unique school because everyone wears a suit, boys and girls. Every day there's all the big banks, all the hedge funds, all the private equity firms are always hosting, a mix or a panel, workshops to case study competitions. And sort of you have to be on your toes, stay sharp. And that's where I would say being around a lot of that competitiveness and sort of everyone wanted to become an investment banker. Organically, I'm like, okay, that's what I want to get into.
Yeah.
So I say I fell into it.
Yeah, no, I mean, almost kind of if I'm interpreting it correctly, almost by default of the choice of that college.
Correct.
Right. Then you set yourself on a path that was, okay, I'm going to go study this here. Like, this is probably what everybody else is going to do. So then you're drawn in that direction.
Yep. That's how exactly it happened. Yep.
That's pretty cool. All right. So you burned out, right? Like, that's a phrase we use a lot now. It's also a phrase for people that are familiar with that industry, right? That's a pretty common thing, right? That's a tough grind of an industry. And so you put in almost a decade-ish there. By the end of that run, was it just fatigue in general? Was it tired of the traditional fight? Like, what was it that burned you out?
I would say in general, just the long hours, just the ethos of the industry, you know, just the long hours, managing and leading multiple deals. You know, I would travel a lot for work, so the travel as well. And then a lot of dining and wining and just going out with clients. And then the real honest story was that in July of 2019, my father passed away. So I think it was a combination of multiple things and just the long hours, my dad passing away. You know, I fell into this deep depression. I had a lot of anxiety. Sure. And just truly burned me out. And at that sort of wrapping up 2019 and early 2020, I needed something else. Right.
Yeah. No, it's very, very natural. Right. I mean, by the way, that's one of those half dozen or so kind of super introspective intersections that we cross in life, right? When something like that happens, it causes us to pause.
And many people tell me, dude, you lasted 10 years. Why? And I was like, as an immigrant, as a kid of immigrants, you don't give up. You know, you're the first, I was the first one in my family to, you know, go to college, first one to work in corporate America, first one to be in investment banking, first one to make six figures. So it's like, you don't give up. You just got to grind through it and figure it out. But at the end of it, it was just generally unhealthy. And then mentally, emotionally, obviously I had a family event happen that took me over that edge. And I just needed more clarity. I needed to figure out life. That's why I wanted to travel the world for a whole year.
Yeah. So, all right. So let's jump in. Here we are. Boom. It's like January, February, 2020. We're like, okay, this is awesome. Gonna refresh, gonna hit the reset button, gonna travel, just immerse myself in different things, different experiences. And then the pandemic closes the world down in March. And what did you do with that fork in the road all of a sudden? I mean, now you couldn't travel the world. I mean, you could have, but it would have been really irresponsible and potentially unhealthy.
I would say every time I got a new role, or I was always tinkering or curious as to what is next, right? So even in 2018, I remember I started looking into fintech, into tech early stage. I started doing homework on venture capital. I remember I reached out to Cheryl Campos, who's someone that I was a good friend who I look up to. I've always looked up to, and she's doing amazing work in the ecosystem for VC, for startups. And randomly hit her up on LinkedIn. I was like, hey, Cheryl, I see you're working at a tech startup. Would love to learn a little bit more. And she was very kind to give me a 30-minute call. And from there, just continue doing more research. And then by the time 2020 came in, I had some idea and some sort of network.
Yeah.
Do more research. And then I would say in 2020, because of the pandemic, sort of was heads down doing research after 10 years of working in banking. I don't know. I just needed to do something. I couldn't just lay on my back. I just couldn't just not do anything.
Yeah.
So I started doing a lot of consulting work, doing advisor work for startups, doing pitches, fixing pitches, and organically I joined an angel syndicate and started investing my own private capital, learning about fintech. That's when I came across Web3. And then in my sort of self-study of fintech, Web3, I went down the rabbit hole, right? Went down the rabbit hole within the Ethereum ecosystem, its many use cases, specifically the use cases within decentralized finance, or the future of finance, because of the background, because of the sort of understanding of the life cycle of a loan in my 10 years of experience. You know, I started my career at Moody's, then I went over, I was in the credit risk department of a bank, went into corporate credit, and then eventually investment banking. So I was able to see the whole life cycle of a loan per se, and then understand that it's very, I would say the systems are very archaic and the rails are just old. historically, all the big mega banks have grown by acquiring other company, other banks. So their systems, you know, are very silo. They don't talk to each other. I was able to understand that the front end, you know, the UI UX is pretty, but the back end is very, very sort of archaic and broken. And via new technologies and new companies like FinTech and Web3, you're able to optimize those processes and create sort of new efficient ways to make those same systems, functions, and tech stack work.
Let's go back a couple steps just to help educate folks, right? Because neither you or I are the types that we assume everybody knows all the cool lingo that we use, right? So let's talk, explain Web3. Like just for folks that don't know, explain Web3 from your point of view.
I'll keep it very high level, right? So I would say the first internet that we started using, the first Web1 would be static pages that you will be able to just look at information. Imagine the yellow pages, right? So when the yellow pages went digital and you were able to see them on a screen, that was the first version of the internet, right? You couldn't communicate, you couldn't interact with the page. You were only able to read. So that was Web 1. I'll use a general example. I would say Web 2 is the current technology, the current internet that we use today, where you're able to interact. For example, if you go to Macy's, the Nike website, you're able to click through different categories, go to, I don't know, athletic wear, sneakers. You could pick some Air Force Ones, put your credit card in. You're able to interact with the website, with the web page, and there's third-party vendors along the way, credit card processors, et cetera, shipping that gets the products from point A to point B to make it all work. So that's the current internet that everyone knows today. That's Web 2. The new internet is the one that is, I would say, is being built currently right now, that 90% of the global population doesn't yet know it or understand it because of the nascent nature of the technology. And it's still primitive and a lot of infrastructure is still being built. It's quirky. And right now, commercially, there's not many use cases out there. Therefore, the world doesn't understand it. What is Web3? Web3 just eliminates the third parties, like, for example, that Nike example that I gave you, the payment processors and whatnot. And now you're able to have a direct line of communication and payment rails from a seller or a vendor to the user or whoever is buying that or the customer of that purchase.
And some of that back end in your Nike, I'm going to buy some Nikes, some Air Force Ones online from Nike, I think, right? And I would say most people probably don't appreciate how many vendors or technologies or points of connection might exist between the moment you log on to that webpage on Nike.com and or on Amazon or something, and then when it gets to your door. Because the simple consumer version is just, I don't know, I bought it from them. And I don't really care what happened in between, right? Until something goes wrong. And then it's, I can't track your order. We don't have your credit card. We lost your credit card got broken into because we had a data breach. But that wasn't us. That was our vendor. Or the merchant number was wrong. So what you're explaining to us is both the future is, or the current is, this multi-layered series of technologies and vendors, solutions that are all stacked on top of each other to give us the experience that we get in a couple clicks as a consumer. But what you're forecasting is that the next evolution of all of this stuff is the ability to securely, and my words, maybe more efficiently, directly interact with the seller as the buyer, as the consumer.
Yeah, with the example that I gave, you're 100% correct, right? The current system that we use today is, you know, there's many third parties or intermediaries where, by optimizing it with this new technology, the cost of buying something can be reduced, the speed that you get it can be increased, et cetera. So yeah, that's one of the many use cases, but I'll use a commercial one so people understand it. And the fact that as users or as customers, we've been very accustomed to not even think about the technology and just press a button in our lives and we receive it in our front steps.
Right.
So yeah. I mean, there's many other sort of use cases, but that could be an easy one so the general public could understand.
And so within Web3, we have other tools, other pieces of the puzzle, right? Blockchain is a word, a descriptor of a technology that a lot of people here used or did hear used before we even probably used Web3, right? There are other tools and products that have come and gone, kind of that are under this banner of the next iteration of the internet or of how we interact with each other online. Talk to me about maybe how, like in your experiences, as you got into it, you started to realize, hey, okay, so I understand, like I have 10 years of understanding like the fin in fintech, right? Like I understand how this stuff works and how complicated it is or how it could be better. And I also understand markets and I understand like disparate faraway markets, right? In Latin America, where you had developed an expertise. And so as you got into this Web3 economy, did you start to see, like, how did it play out, like, as an artist in your mind? Like, did you start to see applications? Were you like, oh, man, this would be huge in Ecuador. This would be, or did you start to see kind of like, oh, this would fix the problem that, like, Goldman Sachs has had for 112 years?
Yeah, so the first use case that outside of just working on Wall Street, you know, as an immigrant, as a son of immigrants, my mom would send money back to Ecuador, you know, to our families, to our aunts and uncles, my grandma. So the remittances space was actually the first use case that was the aha moment for me. As users, we go to, for example, a Western Union, we say we want to send $100 to Ecuador, we pay the fee and we forget about it, right? And a couple of days later, our family members receive it over in Ecuador. But along the way, and the steps from point A to point B are very cumbersome. The technology behind it is very old, it's archaic. There's a lot of intermediaries, there's borders that you have to cross, right? And make sure that all of that gets taken care of.
And sometimes takes literally days.
Days, yeah.
Like days in like a week, like 5 to 7 days.
Yeah. And with blockchain technology now, we all have banks in our pockets, which are phones, and there's something called a digital wallet. So now someone that can have a digital wallet can transfer money, digital money, from my digital wallet to my grandma's digital wallet in Ecuador. And because there's not many intermediaries along the way, it's immediate, sometimes a couple of minutes, and there's a cost reduction on all of that, right? So at a very simple sort of use case or a very simple level, leveraging this new technology allows you to be timely and cost effective to users, right? A quick example that I like to give is that the average daily wage of a sort of farmer or blue collar worker in Ecuador is $10 a day, right? So sometimes a fee to send $100 is $5. You're literally like spending what to us may seem a rounding error or a coffee, you know, in our mornings. It's half a day's labor in these third world countries. So by reducing those costs, obviously, if you accumulate all those fees, it's a lot of capital that can go to the hands of our communities in Latin America. Beyond that, here in America itself, right? So,
yeah. And for people that don't know, the remittances market that Christian is referring to, if you're in the US in this conversation, sending money abroad or any other inter-countries, sending money back home, so to speak, those are trillions of dollars.
Trillions.
Like it's, yeah, I mean, it's cumulatively trillions. It's billions and billions per country.
Yeah.
I know I've heard the statistic over the years repeatedly as we did a lot of business in Mexico. Just the remittances market from the U.S. to Mexico is like an economy of its own.
Yep.
Right. Which is amazing. So, all right. So you're down the rabbit hole. It's pandemic. You're like, okay, wait a minute. Maybe I didn't need to refresh myself on the beaches of Cozumel. Right. Maybe I needed to refresh myself by just immersing myself in a whole new way of work and in a new professional pursuit, and you stumble forward again, right, into this new chapter of your life. Now, did you immediately found your own firm? Did you really, okay, this is what I'm going to do. I've been angel investing and I've been building my network and my syndicate. Like, I think I could capitalize and do this myself, or was there some interim steps in that journey?
So no, beyond angel investing and joining an angel syndicate, I later went on to work at OP Crypto. So OP Crypto was founded by David Gann, who's a former, just like me, an investment banker, loved his background, former investment banker, went off to he launched his own startup, sold it, went to work in private equity. And during his MBA in Asia, came across Web3 cryptocurrencies, cryptography. He went off to go work at Huobi, which is an exchange for those that don't know what, for example, the same thing that the New York Stock Exchange is to equities. Huobi is a cryptocurrency exchange, just like Coinbase here in the United States. And there he led venture investing and also led their fund of funds strategy globally. He started his own firm back in 21. And then when I joined the team, he was raising his second fund. It was a fund of funds. And okay. I told him, like, hey, David, we'd love to, you know, join the team. I want to learn more. I want to help grow an institutional fund and sort of learn from the ground up what it is to raise a fund. You know, I had already had some experience in deploying capital via a syndicate. So now I wanted to do it more, you know, in a more institutionalized way. So yeah, helped him fundraise, and along the way helped also with a lot of due diligence, looking at US and Latin America companies within the DeFi space, infra space. And I was able to learn a lot by being there with the team. We were able to raise a $60 million fund. We deployed into four funds. A fund of funds is basically a fund, a pool of capital dedicated to invest in other funds. And the strategy there was to invest in emerging fund managers. So individuals that were raising their own funds for the first time. And then we as a fund would go and give them their first check or come in as an anchor investor. So that experience taught me a lot from what it is to raise a vehicle, from legal structuring to operational setup, to, you know, how to build investor relations function. And then just in general, I traveled the world, you know, talking to family offices, high net worth individuals, institutional investors, fundraising. And that opened up my eyes into the world of fundraising and how it all worked. And, you know, it was just an overall great experience. And earlier this year, it was already established that once we finish fundraising, that from a fund of fund perspective, there's not much to do.
Sure.
The investment pace for a vehicle like that is about 3 to 5 investments per year. It's not a lot.
Yeah.
So after all of that, I decided to just go off my own. And it's been a plan that I've had since, I would say, I left banking. I always wanted to start something.
Yeah.
And I put in my reps via angel syndicates, put in my reps with OP Crypto and David and the team. And I think after 14 years of, you know, working for other people, for other institutions, it was time to go off on my own. And that's when Rayo Capital was born. And happy to elaborate more on what we're doing with.
Yeah, what an awesome apprenticeship.
Oh, 100%.
Right? I mean, what a tremendous opportunity, kind of, like you said, as a result of your work and kind of, my daughter and I have always had this phrase, like, put yourself in the way of...
Yeah.
The things that you want to achieve or that you want to explore, right? Like, it's born from my dad used to say to me in sales when he was teaching me when I first went to work for him out of college, like, literally, like, your job isn't to like just pander to the people that are around you. It's to, like, go down the street, stand on the corner where the people that you're seeking are going to eventually pass by, right? And then tell the story to those people. So put yourself in the way of where you want to be.
I agree with you 100%.
And you did. So all right. So again, kind of once we got to that end of that run in banking and you foresaw kind of the world in a different way, or at least this next chapter of your life in a different way than you had led that first chapter in the first 10 years, you knew, okay, I'm going to build something for myself. And now you get exposed to all kinds of different things and you're starting to see some use cases that all make sense to you because you've had these experiences, right? Your unique experience, the legit, like, why you. And why this is starting to kind of come into focus here. And so tell us that story. You launched the fund.
So, and then I would take a step back. While I was, you know, investing and working over at OP Crypto, I co-founded a community called Web3 Familia.
Okay, so that I was going to ask. So this runs parallel basically now on the timeline.
Correct. So, you know, and I would say, and then to bring it all together, so Web3 Familia is a culmination of my 10 years in banking. It's a culmination of my decade plus experience being at a nonprofit, which is Alpha. And then my investing experience in Web3, where what Alpha was to me from a community support network and just a safe space to come and learn, that is what Web3 Familia ultimately means to me and what we've been able to create since day one, right? So it's an education community. We amplify and activate events both online and in real life. We do events both in Spanish and in English. And during my journey with OP Crypto traveling the world, I was able to activate events across every major city in the United States, across all over South America, and be able to grow the brand. And within the US, the industry or the sector of Web3, it's very male dominated. There's not much diversity. And the simple fact that we were able to bring a different sort of vibe, a different sort of type of event, right? We would amplify and highlight founders that spoke Spanish. Something as simple as that just opened up a lot of doors, and we grew fast, and we've become sort of the premier network resource aggregator in the United States and Latin America, where we're very active now, and it's opened many doors, and now it serves as top of funnel to identify really good founders that are building great companies that once they become venture backable, they graduate to Rayo Capitals, and then I can elaborate on Rayo Capital now.
No, that I mean, that, thank you for aligning the timeline there, because I wasn't sure what the timeline was. And also, let's stop and applaud you for that, right? Because every new iterative space inside of the broader thing of tech, right, eventually starts out too white, too male, too, you know, elite university tech bro-ish. And that is unfortunate. And it also just is what it is, right? And so it, in some ways, it's so cool to think that you took like some of the lessons learned and the experiences learned from Alpha and how that impacted you in your journey, right? In that space. And you're like, wait a minute, what if we created that kind of, and I love you use the word like safe space. Like, what if we created that kind of community where people who want to learn about this or are already like tinkering around the edges of it or in it, but are feeling like super alone and in it. Right. That they can like, we can put the flag up and go like, hey, come over here. Just like you. Like, you knew that there were Latino professional people before you ever found Alpha. Like, Alpha may have been the first people you really saw in suits, but you knew that there were some out there. You just didn't know them in your day-to-day life where you grew up. Right. So now all of a sudden it's like, okay, there are people that are building these technologies or in these spaces, but probably really disconnected from each other and not feeling like they're very much part of any community. And you guys come along and you say, let's inject a community.
Yeah.
Like, let's put something into the space that didn't exist. And then it becomes, I would imagine, then it becomes like the sun, right? Then it's just a magnet for all those good, curious passersby.
Yeah, no, 100%. And then something that I learned at Alpha and just all the other communities that we collaborate with is the power of being intentional, right? As a Latino male leader, you have to own that you are a leader, but also be very intentional with everything that you do and make sure that, you know, if you see a room that lacks diversity, open up, raise your hand, create an opportunity, demand, right? That if I get invited to a panel, I want a woman on, you know, there's a lot of great talented individuals, investors, founders out there that can also be there, right? That are more than qualified to be there. Just that sometimes these networks don't have the network or the pipeline. And obviously being intentional will definitely open up the space. And that's what we are doing, right? With Web3 Familia, with everything that we do at Rayo Capital, there's a lot of intentionality behind the networks or the funnels that we tap into that I say this with confidence. I don't have to try. There's a lot of top quality talent, top quality startup founders building amazing companies out there that come from diverse backgrounds, right? So yep. I'm happy to get more into that.
100%. And in a, like, you're in New York City, I'm in Los Angeles, like obviously deeply, deeply, deeply diverse communities, but in a country that's progressively more diverse, right? And in a country that will be progressively more brown skin than white skin, like over the next 25 years and forever thereafter, it's almost like, to guys like you and I that think about this intentionally or we're open to it, it's like obvious that there are talented people that are from diverse backgrounds and look different and sound different to one another, right? Maybe it's not obvious to some parts of the world, but like it's obvious that of course there would be. Just based on sheer numbers, there would be. Just based on normal distribution of talents and knowledge and experiences,
correct,
there would be, right? But it just doesn't propagate itself that way until there are communities or organizations that act as catalysts. And that's in part what you guys are doing. So in this sense, what we're seeing is then Ryo Capital is, like you said, it's like the top of the stack. It's like the, it's the capital vehicle, my words, I'm putting them in your mouth here. It's like the capital vehicle that can extend, provide value to the community that's built on the base.
Correct.
Right. So it was kind of like the, had you not been Ryo Cap, like built Ryo Capital, somebody would have, like somebody would have had to, because you were, you built, you're building this community. And then the next natural step with, once we build the community, is like, okay, we need to have people that are going to fund that community. And obviously it's easier to convince people inside the community to fund that community than it is to convince people outside of it.
Yeah. So just to get into, I guess, the details of Ryo Capital, we have a global mandate to back early stage, pre-seed and seed stage founders globally, you know, building Web3 companies with an emphasis of, you know, the underdog founder within the United States and Latin America. And with that said, you know, we launched an accelerator program in June, and we actually just wrapped up our demo day. It was a structured program of 12 weeks where we helped our seven companies across legal structuring, token finance, go to market and fundraising. And something that, again, because of the nascent nature of the space, a lot of the legacy investors use traditional signals to identify quality talent. What are those traditional signals? You know, in the United States, it could be the Harvard, the Stanford, you know, the Yale, the Goldman, the Carlyles, the JP Morgans of the world. And those are like stamps of approvals that people use to make sure that it just identifies you as a, you know, high achieving individual and you have a network, right? And then for us, and I say this, you know, we put in the work and we've been able to network across not only traditional finance, but also now the venture capital space within fintech, Web3, that we could be the signal to the unseen founder. Mm. We could be the signal to Latin America.
So you got that Web3 familiar stamp. You got that Ryo accelerator stamp. Now it's like, ah, okay, these, like, they've passed through some filters that we know are really credible.
Yeah. And obviously for us, that's what we want to be. We want to be, you know, we want to be the bridge between US and Latin. We want to be the bridge between the unseen founder and capital. And that's what our goal is, to, you know, to be able to provide those resources, become partners with these founders and go along with them in the journey of building amazing companies.
Yeah. That's awesome. You said in your experiences in the what I call the apprenticeship with the OP crypto guys, you got to learn the whole language of and the culture of pitching family offices all over the world, et cetera, all that kind of stuff. When you're launching this fund, did you find it, oversimplified question, right? Did you find it like easy, hard to convince people of the vision that you have that you just shared with us? Or like, what was that process like, getting people to back your vision for this fund and how, what it would do?
I think I'm a point in my life where, you know, the traditional finance experience serves as an anchor to me, serves as an anchor to the story that I bring to the table, and just serves as an anchor to the journey that I'm moving forward with, where this is now sort of my vision, my mandate, something that I want to do for the next 20, 30, 40 years. And if there's something that I learned, you have to talk to the right audience and you have to find that community that understands the vision, or at least gets it to a certain extent, because, you know, it's going to be a long-term sort of relationship when those investors come in as investors to the fund. Has it been hard? Again, I'm talking to the community. I'm talking to those who sort of understand the ecosystem. And organically, I've been able to get a lot of support from, you know, mentors, high net worth individuals, founders in the ecosystem who have had success, have had exits, and foresee that sort of vision and mission that we're going after, which is, again, to bridge that gap between the United States and Latin America, to be able to provide resources to those, the unseen founders. And as a capital allocator, as a founder, right? And this is something that I always talk about. You can't be what you can't see. And then if you want partners to come in as investors, you know, as a leader of a firm, organically sort of my inbound is going to be, you know, diverse founders, diverse talent. Right. So, and then again, those individuals or investors that eventually will come and be part of my journey, they'll understand and see the mission and vision that I have. And again, you just got to find that community that gets it.
Yeah, no, it's 100% true. We were talking about before the idea of like, go put yourself in the way of success. Another funny side story. My dad used to tell me, he said, and my dad, Irish Catholic guy, born in the Depression in Chicago. So everything always had a religious bent to the story, right? And so my dad's teaching of me at 18, 19 years old was, hey, everybody in sales and everybody around you who's going to talk to you about being in sales is going to tell you like your job is to convert the non-believers, right? And he's like, that's not your job at all. He's like, if you're a Catholic, I'm not going to send you into the temple on Sabbath and you're going to try and convert the Jews to become Catholics, right? He's like, that would be ridiculous. He says, what you do is you go find your tribe, you find your believers in what you believe in, and then you pitch them or you tell them the story of your new vision for that, right? Of how you're going to do that thing differently or better or for more people or for a different group of people.
And so I guess to go back to the unconventional way of doing things, right? There's a lot of leaders, venture capital leaders, Latino VC leaders in the space that, you know, we look up to, and I'm very grateful for all the work that they've done, paving the way for people like us to come around and have the resources and learn how it all works. But again, I think those that have stood out have done it in the unconventional way. And everyone has a nuance as to how they do things. And I think for me, right, I'm at the beginning of this journey as an emerging fund manager, and I'm doing it in my own nuanced way. Let's see how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, it's going, right? It's one of those, we don't try, we do, right? And you're not a try guy, you're a do guy. Like, you're just in there in the trenches every day, just trying to build a better, more inclusive future. And you're doing it. What I find fascinating is you're doing it kind of on multiple levels at the same time. Ryo Capital is you're an emerging fund manager, first-time fund manager, trying to do it your way, as you say. Web3 Familia, you're a community builder. And then just from a pure industrial, like technological evolutionary period framework, you're doing this kind of like with a foot planted in the today and a foot planted in the tomorrow. And that's amazing because you have to both live in the today. But what you're saying is like the today is great. But the truth is what I'm more interested in is the founders who are building in tomorrow.
Something that I say always is that when I was in traditional finance and banking, is that we used to finance the past long established corporates. And now in VC, specifically Web3 VC, we're at the forefront of funding the future.
That's awesome. That's a hell of a catchphrase right there. Put that on your website. That's awesome. Okay. So, hey, I always do this to community builders, you know, leaders and fund managers. I'm not going to ask you to pick your favorite child. But out of all the companies, the young founders that you've come across, just this year, you know, are there one or two examples that just jump out at you that are awesome stories to talk about what they're building or what we should know about?
I have 7 favorite kids right now.
Okay, give us a couple examples, and we won't say one favorite, not favorite. You're just going to give us some examples of some great people and great things.
And it's the first cohort that we launched as part of our accelerator program with Ryo Capital. Human Finance from Chile is building e-commerce rails on chain. DP is building an infrastructure protocol for identity. Alphapay is rebuilding sort of the financial rails in Mexico. Wagmi Games is creating a sort of a Web3 gaming franchise leveraging blockchain technology. Fiching from Argentina is building esport fandom on leveraging blockchain technology. Nettyworth is building, it's a lending a platform for on-chain digital assets, but also real-world assets.
That's awesome. There you go. You have 7 favorite kids.
Yeah.
So I love to hear like Mexico, Chile, Argentina, like obviously you with your Ecuadorian background, and we have some couple of cool Ecuadorian friends in common. That's awesome. I've said it a million times. 500 years ago, we were the Americas, and then we splintered ourselves into a bunch of different border lands, and now we're going to basically lean back into being the Americas over the next 100 years. But to finish up, to wrap up this section of the conversation before we turn you into my favorite part of the show and we make you the mentor for the day today, I'm curious. Give me you're a young guy. I've got a couple of decades still on me, And yet I love that you have this idea that this is the stuff you want to work on for the next 10, 20, 30, 40 years of your life. So let's just take a chunk of that future. What is the next 10 years of Ryo Capital, Web3 Familia, and just Web3? Like what's going to happen that we should all be watching for in the next decade?
That's a really good question. I truly believe that information can change people's lives, right? Whether, and that information, you know, could be education. Information is the transfer of value, whether it's monetary, et cetera, right? So for me, how can I facilitate information transfer as much as I can via different vehicles, right? And that's what Ryo Capital, in essence, is there to do. That's what Web3 Familia is there, in essence, to do. So moving forward, I would say my goal is to be the facilitator of information flow, because I truly believe that could change people's lives, you know, change generational wealth. And we're going to do that via capital allocation, right? We're going to do that via education with Web3 Familia. And I truly believe that it's truly simple. Now we just got to do the work and figure it out, yeah, how to do it in an optimal way for the masses. And that's obviously, in my opinion, backing founders that are building solutions for the world, right? So if we could provide resources to those founders, you know, founders do the hardest work anyone could ever sign up to do. And they're the ones that are going to build those solutions for the world. And that's what we're here to do. So I'll leave it there.
That's awesome. You've already given us like 48 minutes worth of incredible advice and insights and wisdom that people are taking notes when they're listening. But let's boil it down to like three takeaways that people can go home and they can apply to their, maybe it's founders, maybe it's first-time fund managers, maybe it's someone who's in community college in New York City who got held back in high school a year because he was hustling Air Force Ones. And the truth was, at that point in his young life, academics was the side hustle, and slinging Air Ones to pay his rent or help with his family's bills was the day job. You know, so whoever this show winds up in the ears of, this is information we're passing into people's ears, right? Like, give us three pieces of your wisdom that we can pass along.
Something that I never understood when I was younger was when people or leaders, business leaders or founders would say, be yourself. I never used to get it. And I always ponder, what the fuck do these, what the hell do these people mean? And I think I get it now. And what they, or at least my interpretation of be yourself, is it's okay to make mistakes. It's okay to ask questions. It's okay to be wrong, right? It's okay to have an ego. It's okay to stumble. But you have to learn from all of that. You have to raise your hand, right? You don't do everything yourself. You have to find the community that is going to be there to support you and get you from point A to point B. So I would say just be yourself, to me, means be your radical self, like radical transparency in who you are, where you come from. Be proud of sort of your story, right? Like, I come from a very unstructured family. And for me, where I found structure, where I found discipline, was Wall Street. And for a really long time, I used to be ashamed to be from the hood. I used to be ashamed to speak Spanish. I used to be ashamed to, you know, have an indigenous background from Ecuador, right? So be yourself, to me, means that. Being comfortable with your skin, being comfortable with your path, your journey, your story. And that truly liberates you, where you no longer are going to use bandwidth to assimilate or to just overthink things. And now you could invest that bandwidth into productive things that you like to do. So that would be my first one. The second one would be double down heavy on your hobbies. Double down heavy on what you like to do. Double down heavy on what makes you happy, because, and this is going to sound cliche, but I really enjoy what I do. If you understand what you're really good at and what you're bad at, focus on what you're good and delegate or hire or seek help for what you're bad at. I think sometimes we want to be perfect, and maybe corporate America maybe forces or pushes that upon you that you have to know it all. You have to be well-rounded. You have to be that. And there's one thing that I've learned with entrepreneurs, you know, entrepreneurs with exits, is that they're really good at one thing and just delegate the rest, right? So I would say that. Figure out what you're really good at, double down heavy onto it, because if you are doing something that you really like to do, it's not actual work. It's fun. You'll do it 24/7, 365.
You want to do it for the next 30 or 40 years of your life.
You know, and I'll give you an example, right? Like for me, I'm a people person. I'm a master connector. I own it. I say it now. I worked in traditional finance and banking for many years. I hated numbers. Everything, a financial model that would take someone an hour would take me 3 hours. Why? Because I just didn't really like it, but I did it. I learned to do it. And having that immigrant mentality of not giving up, I didn't give up for 10 years and I figured it out eventually, right? But had I invested my time into something that I was really good at, who knows where I'll be? I don't regret the journey. Anything, I'm very grateful because it taught me a lot. But the number two would be, you know, double down heavy on what you're good at, identify what you're bad at, own it, and seek help or delegate. And the last piece would be happy with yourself and everything that you do. And I think success, whether it's financially, whether it's emotionally, whether it's in general, as a whole, first has to start with the individual. Because if you're not happy, if you don't resolve your inner demons, if you don't resolve, you know, the past, start by forgiving yourself first, and then start by forgiving those who you have hurt by, you know, saying I'm sorry, and don't expect anything back from that. And I think that's very liberating. And I say that from personal experience. The moment I started looking inward and figuring out, you know, my past and what made me uncomfortable on certain things, I learned to forgive myself. I learned to ask for forgiveness. And that was very liberating. And I think because of that, I've been able to achieve certain milestones in my life that now are putting me in a position to achieve some sort of success. I still have a long way to go.
With the impact you have and the relationships that you built and the way that you give, I'm not going to call it giving back, right? Because that's again, that kind of old school philanthropical description. But just the way you give, like you're giving forward. You're giving constantly. You're giving today, tomorrow. The way you do that, you're successful, buddy. You're richer than some people who have 100 times X more money than you do. and that comes from, it emanates from all those points, but from that last point especially. Like, there's just something, it took me to come to that level of peace with myself until I was around like 40-ish. And that was just a series of circumstances in my life that kind of all came to a head at that moment. And I can tell you the journey from then to now at 55 has been just this constant refinement of just the level of joy that I have, like on a daily basis, the focus that I do, as you say, on the things that I'm good at and segmenting out the things that I'm not. And then just really like just being cool with like loving myself, how I am. And, you know, it was like early 40s, but I kind of finally figured out that I used to joke about this. I was like, so I finally figured out in my early 40s that like half of the world was going to think I was an asshole and half the world would run through fire with me. And I was like, so I'm just going to start hanging out with just the people that would run through fire with me. Like, and then you get the naysayers every once in a while that push back and they're like, yeah, but you know, you should value and listening to other people's opinions who disagree with you. I'm like, yeah. I'm not 19. Like, I'm 40 something years old. Like, I've heard all the opinions. I've listened to all the different perspectives. I have a healthy worldview. Like, but at the end of the day, it's the, like, I love who I am and you do as well. And so that's one of the things that makes it easy for you and I to find each other in the world. Right. And then wake up and be like, oh shit. And we have this friend in common and this friend in common and this people and those people. Like, it's not a surprise after it is a surprise in the moment, but then it's not a surprise once it sinks in, because it's like, ah, see, this is how like good people who found their way to loving themselves and then using their gifts at scale to positively impact other people. Like, this is how it works. Like, we find each other eventually.
Good point. I like that. I love that.
I'm grateful for having found you. And now, segue of all segues, how can people find you on social media? Or how can we find the firm? How do we find Web3 Familia? Apply to the Excel? Like, how do we stay connected to you?
Yeah, in general, I mean, I'm pretty active across LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram. So Christian Arvise is sort of, you know, my handle. Yeah, across socials, you know, Narvaez, Chris, Twitter, and Instagram. And then, yeah, for Rayo Capital, across all social media, it's Rayo Capital. And then Web3 Familia across all social is Web3 Familia.
And are there any Web3 Familia events or things coming up like between now and the end of the year?
Yeah, we actually have our second annual summit coming up November 17th. It's our second birthday. We can't believe it's
awesome.
How time flies. It's our second birthday. We are, yeah, wrapping up. The details going to be here in New York. More to come across our socials and our newsletter. Yeah, for resources and just general education, sign up to our newsletter, our Substack. It's Web3 Familia. And yeah.
That's great. Awesome, buddy. It was a pleasure, as I knew it would be. Thank you. Thanks for being a shining light in the community. Thanks for just leading the way that you do. This is 55 minutes of like finding out that you're just as authentic as I thought you were.
Thank you, man. No, appreciate the invitation. Obviously, anything that I could do, if it's helpful to share the story, trying to be as original, as authentic as I can be. And if that helps one person, I think that's already a big win.
That's it. 100% agree with you. We're in the information dispersal business. That's what you said.
Yeah.
That's what we're doing. I just do it through storytelling. That's it. You do it through capital. I do it through storytelling. Thanks, brother.
Thank you.
As always, we thank you so much for listening. Today's show was recorded in Los Angeles and produced by Deanna Bernal in Mexico City. You can always find, like, follow, subscribe, and share our show via any popular podcasting platform, as well as find us on social media at Mentors Today. And if you'd like to connect with our host, you can find Rob at I Am Rob Ryan on just about any social media platform. Gracias, and thank you.